from San Francisco, California, with your host, Ben Kaspik. This is Locked On Giants Baseball. Welcome back to Locked On Giants Baseball, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. My name is Ben Kaspik, and I'm thrilled to be with you again today. On this show, we provide daily episodes Monday through Friday, approximately 15 minutes in length, talking about the San Francisco Giants in a way that's data-driven and rational, but also insightful and easily digestible, easy for everyone to understand. To get this show every day, you need to hit that subscribe button if you haven't done so already. You can find us on the brand new podcast app Himalaya or Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, and Spotify. Then, when you're driving to work, from work, or around town, all you have to do is tell your smart device to play podcast Locked On Giants Baseball, and we'll be right there with you for the drive. If your company wants to reach an upscale male audience, then your company's ad should be running on this podcast. To get your company connected with this audience, email locked@lockedonpodcasts.com to get more details about increasing your business. Coming up on today's show, we're going to do some Q&A. I want to thank everyone who, at the last minute, I forgot to post this yesterday. A lot of people came through and submitted some great questions today in the hour or two before we got this podcast underway. Aaron, who is a self-admitted depressed Giants fan, wants to know, when will Steven Duggar get called up? He says, I think he got his timing back in Sacramento. So yeah, he's definitely on a roll there. Since he got sent down, he's hitting .367 with a .406 on base and a .700 slugging. Just yesterday, he went 3-for-4, two singles, a double, a walk, a stolen base. So yeah, he's been tearing it up for sure. So the issue I'm seeing is I don't exactly see where he fits on the roster as it is currently constructed. The plan, obviously, the evolved plan, once they acquired Kevin Pillar, they stuck Duggar in right field, which I never thought made sense, with Pillar in center, and then eventually they realized, okay, Pillar is a worse defensive player than Duggar, and Duggar's not really hitting at all, so just having him in right field is really wasting his talents and making it harder to accept the poor performance with the bat. So then they put Duggar back in center, and Pillar kind of had played his way out of starting every day at that point. But then right around at that time, Kevin Pillar flipped a switch and became red hot again, like we saw early on in the season. But the hitting just continued to not be there for Duggar, who on the season at the major league level is hitting .234 with just a .277 on base and .343 slugging. So when you combine that with the fact that he's not been a very good base runner, he's made a lot of outs on the bases, he's attempted 5 stolen bases and only been successful once, you add it all up and he's been a below replacement level player on the season. You know, I do have legitimate concerns about him offensively. But the fact is, Kevin Pillar has been carrying them offensively right now, so I don't think there's a big rush to bring back Steven Duggar, because where is he going to play? I think they're happy, certainly, with their platoon in left right now, with Dickerson carrying the load on the strong side against righties, and Tyler Austin playing against lefties, and then in center, it's just been Kevin Pillar. And then in right, they've had Tyler Austin and Mike Yastrzemski, although two of the last three games before the break against righties, Mike Yastrzemski didn't start and it was Austin Slater in there. So I just don't necessarily see where Steven Duggar is going to play. So I don't essentially anticipate that he's going to be called up here very soon. The thing that would trigger for me him getting called back up would be Kevin Pillar going through another one of those stretches where his bat looks unplayable. But the thing about Pillar is that when he's hit for power. So he and Duggar both have similar on-base percentages around .275, which is just dreadful. But Pillar at least has a .418 slugging, and then his defense has been good, much improved over where it was kind of earlier on. I think he was helped by moving to right, but then he's so far been fine in center as well. But then his base running especially has been excellent. He's been worth about 4 runs above average on the base paths for the Giants this season. And that base running metric factors in, you know, first to third, first to home, second to home, stolen bases. He's attempted 9 steals and been successful 8 times. So he's made a difference on the base paths, and that kind of gets overlooked sometimes. But to me, Pillar has been clearly the better player so far on the season. Just to put that base running metric for Pillar into perspective, since he joined the Giants, he's tied with Christian Yelich for the fourth most base running value in the National League, behind just Colton Wong, Jean Segura, and Trevor Story. But yeah, we did see him like completely go into a funk for well over a month, maybe even close to 2 months. So if and when that happens with Pillar, I think that would be the point at which they bring back Steven Duggar. I could obviously be wrong, but that would be my inclination. And then maybe you go back to having a platoon in center, just like they've had in right and left. Problem is, too, I don't know who gets bumped off the roster in that scenario. And then the last factor is that they, you know, July 31st trading deadline fast approaching. There's going to be a ton of roster movement. So it very well could happen that as guys get moved, Steven Duggar is one of the first guys to be bumped up on the depth chart onto the Major League roster. So Brian Turner asks, how much of a factor, if any, should the entertainment value of guys like Bumgarner and Sandoval be in trading them? Obviously, it would only last to the end of this season, but should it be considered? How does Zaidi weigh that into his decision? So, you know, looking at the time, I think we're going to have to answer this one more in the second half. So instead of starting it and then stopping midway through, we'll just take a little break and come back in the second half to answer Brian Turner's question. Okay, so as promised, here in the second half, we're going to answer Brian Turner's question and also one or two other questions as well. So again, Brian asks, how much of a factor should the entertainment value of guys like Bumgarner and Sandoval be in trading them? I do think it's a factor. And the next question we're going to talk about compares the Giants' rebuild to the rebuilds of Miami, Baltimore, and Detroit. And specifically in Miami, we've seen the polar opposite of factoring in entertainment value in trades. The Marlins just gut their team completely. So this is what it would look like if the Giants operated with no conscience and no regard for their fans' entertainment. And we can see that Marlins fans certainly hate that approach. And I think it's way more extreme than even if the Giants were to trade Bumgarner and Sandoval. It's been like a recurring theme for them. But I do not think that that should really factor into the decision to keep them or not. If the return is not enough, then yes, we've actually heard Farhan Zaidi say that the response, especially like in the clubhouse, this was kind of part of the fallout of those Derek Holland comments about he had no idea what the front office was doing and he kind of spoke for the clubhouse. There was reports that behind closed doors, these comments were celebrated within the clubhouse. So then shortly after that, there was like an interview or a podcast with Farhan Zaidi, and he talked about sometimes they have to decide whether or not to make a move that's so incremental and so marginal. They have to weigh the benefits versus the cost of having people get worn out by all the constant movement with the roster. So that being said, someone like Pablo Sandoval, you're not going to get like a top 100 prospect for Pablo Sandoval. It's just not going to happen. So at what point is it really worth it to make that trade if you know it's going to be unpopular with the clubhouse and with the fans? So I originally said no, it shouldn't be a factor, but I actually think in the case of someone like Sandoval, it is a factor. And the Giants at a certain point would make that trade, but I do think at a certain point, the marginal fringe prospect they might get for Sandoval might not be worth the negativity that the players and Bochy in his last season and even the fans would have to seeing him get dealt away. So in that regard, I would actually be surprised if Pablo Sandoval gets traded. They should try to trade him, but I'm guessing teams won't want to give up much for him. I'm reminded again, we've talked about this a million times, but JD Martinez, dealt from the Tigers to the Diamondbacks, netted a very modest return for the Tigers. And JD Martinez was many times the player that Pablo Sandoval is right now, also in a rental situation. But with Bumgarner, I think you could expect to get a more hefty return. And then, you know, it's certainly a factor as well. If they cannot get a return that they're comfortable with, then there's no reason to trade him because of the perception. Like, he doesn't want to be the new guy in town trading Bumgarner for a underwhelming return. At that point, it's just not worth it. And I don't know if it's entertainment value as much as it is establishing goodwill and good faith from the fans. That being said, I would be very surprised if Bumgarner is not traded by July 31st, and same goes with Will Smith. Julesy Boy says, compare their rebuild to Miami, Detroit, and Baltimore. So this is a fascinating question and one that he addressed in a Forbes article talking about the Tigers when they extended Al Avila recently. There was a quote from the owner talking about how Al Avila has done a commendable job stockpiling extremely talented young players. And I was caught a little bit off guard by those remarks because my impression from afar of the Tigers' rebuild is that it's been mostly unsuccessful and they haven't really developed too many exciting players in the interim between the last time they were good and now. And then I don't necessarily see a lot of hope on the horizon. I mean, Casey Mize is coming, Matt Manning, Riley Green. But at the same time, I've seen more from Farhan Zaidi and the Giants in the last 3 months than I've seen from the Detroit Tigers in the last 3 years. Like, why were they not interested in Alex Dickerson? I think he would have helped any rebuilding team. He was the perfect guy to target if you're a team that is looking to unearth talented players at an affordable cost. He's had success in the past at the major league level, expendable to the Padres, didn't have to give up too much to get him, and just kind of forcing the issue and not trying to push your window back to multiple years down the road. The Giants are clearly trying to escalate this process and make it more of something that happens on the fly rather than a commitment to being awful for just multiple seasons in a row and stockpiling top draft picks. I don't know if that's Detroit's plan, but that hopefully that's their plan because that's what's happening. I could see the Giants becoming good again in a couple of years versus Detroit. I don't necessarily see that on the horizon. And maybe I'm just biased in that regard. But, you know, pickups like Tyler Austin, Kevin Pillar, Alex Dickerson, Mike Yastrzemski are guys, you know, who can help in the present and potentially in the future. And so I get it. These guys probably, except maybe with the exception of Dickerson, probably won't be a part of the longer term. But it's a commitment to making the best team possible in the present without sacrificing the future. The Giants are no worse off in the future than they were before the season, yet the product on the field is much better in the present. So I'm kind of the low man on what the Tigers are doing. I know Julesy Boy, you know, his article kind of said as much as well. With the Orioles, I view them similarly to how I view the Giants, except they were in a little bit of a worse situation. The team was worse. They don't have the core of guys who have done really well in the past like the Giants did entering the season. Giants also had some better pitching than the Orioles. But I do think Mike Elias, brought over from the Astros to be their general manager, is doing a great job so far. Really like Adley Rutschman, the number one overall pick. I think he's going to be potentially a transformational talent for them. And I trust him being Mike Elias, to make good moves here at the trading deadline. I think Trey Mancini, you could definitely see being dealt. And they've kind of been doing what the Giants have been doing, a lot of turnover and being willing to move on from guys who aren't performing. That's something I haven't seen so much from the Tigers, granted from afar, but they kind of just stick with guys, even guys who are not performing well, without continuing to cycle through and seeing guys who might be a better fit and potentially provide more value in the short and long term. The Orioles have used a ton of pitchers. I think they're leading MLB in pitchers used on the season. At least they were a little bit earlier on. I wouldn't be surprised if it's still the case. But their pitching is so bad, they should be cycling through a bunch of pitchers and seeing who, you know, giving guys opportunities and seeing who can run with it. That's what the Giants have been doing as well. In Miami, I mean, it's a totally different approach. They just completely gut their major league team. They do this over and over. It's quite depressing. I would hate to be a Marlins fan. I think they were a little bit hasty. There was no need necessarily to trade all three of Stanton, Yelich, and Ozuna at once in that one off season. Yelich in particular is looking like a very bad trade for the Marlins. I mean, he became arguably the best player in the National League after that trade, and they got kind of a modest return for him. Lewis Brinson really has not panned out. Yelich is signed to an extremely team-friendly deal that runs through potentially the 2022 season. So the Brewers can control him for three additional years after 2019, and this is already the second year he's been there. So I wouldn't have wanted a package of minor leaguers for Yelich. I mean, Christian Yelich might have the top trade value of anyone in baseball right now. So the Giants don't really have any players like this. I don't understand why the Marlins would trade a guy who's controllable for like five additional seasons at an extremely team-friendly deal. Made sense to trade Stanton. they didn't want to have to deal with that contract on the back end, and it's looking like a good thing they got out from underneath it. It made sense to trade Ozuna because he was, you know, he was a free agent sooner. He's going to be a free agent after this season. But Yelich is the one that got away there. I do think the Marlins tend to do a pretty good job of developing talent. They've got a pretty good and interesting young pitching staff, so I like what they've done there. And they've also developed some interesting offensive players. Brian Anderson, Jorge Alfaro is doing well for them. He was part of that JT Realmuto trade. Garrett Cooper doing well as well. So they've got some pieces. I'm not too pessimistic about the Marlins and their chances of building up some more quality major league players. They have a track record of doing that. But the question is, will they be able to sustain it, or are they just going to trade those guys away once they become established big leaguers? But anyway, really, among all three teams, I put more confidence than in any other person running the show in Farhan Zaidi. I think he's the perfect man for this job. Demonstrated track record of success. If the Giants can emulate and be anything like the Los Angeles Dodgers, then they're going to be in a great situation. I think that is what we've seen so far. They're doing the best they can to work towards that model. And like Farhan Zaidi himself said, one good baseball decision at a time. We've already seen it make a difference. And I'd really like to see what that can do over the course of 2 years, 3 years, 4 years, 5 years. I think they're going to be in really good shape. Not sure I can say the same thing about the Tigers. Not so sure about the Marlins. It depends on their commitment to the guys they do develop. Well, we know the Giants will be committed to being good, even if it means spending some money. And then again, I feel good about the Orioles' chances as well. I think their process might take a little longer than the Giants, but more or less a similar-ish timeline. Anyway, that is all the time we have for today. Finally, tonight, the Giants start the second half of the season in Milwaukee, taking on the Brewers. It'll be Sean Anderson on the mound for the Giants. Chase Anderson on the mound for the Brewers. He's a right-handed pitcher, so expect to see Alex Dickerson. Will be interesting to see if it'll be Mike Yastrzemski or Austin Slater in right. They weren't really platooning in the last series, so we'll see. Bumgarner on Saturday, Tyler Beede on Sunday. We'll be back with another episode on Monday talking about this series over the weekend. Remember, to get this show every day, you need to hit that subscribe button if you haven't done so already. You can find us on the brand new podcast app Himalaya or Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, and Spotify. Once again, my name is Ben Caspick. You can follow me on Twitter at @Cove_cast. If you like this show, please consider leaving a review and telling your friends and family to check us out. I cannot wait to be with you again on Monday. And until then, we'll see you next time.